You're listening to the Working It Out podcast, part of the Humours of Hit network. I'm Alex, and I'm here to look into what inspires those we look to for motivation. I want to understand their real relationship with physical activity and the barriers they've had to break through to be happy, but also successful. For our third episode, we have RuPaul's Drag Race's hodgepodge queen and West End star, Vinegar Strokes. We talk about everything from jock straps, the secrets of a good show, to the current issues with sexuality in football and the need for an FA gay pride. This was so much fun and so interesting, and I can't wait for you to hear it. Welcome to the Humans of Hit community, Vinegar Strokes.
Hello, humans and slags, all those people. How are you?
That's the first one. We love it. Yeah, we are so excited to have you today. Thank you so much.
Oh, no, thank you for having me.
No worries. We'll get straight in with the first question, and it's a pretty fun one. We've had some really random answers so far.
Oh,
so
lovely.
All of the people who come onto the podcast to share one special item about their relationship with physical activity and put it into the Humans of Hit locker. And this item can be anything from your past, present, or future. And it's anything from a comfort blanket from when you're younger, when you're maybe on your way to do some physical activity, or just a pair of socks that someone's done. So whilst I've kind of given you an idea, is there something that you would like to put into our rather large locker?
Oh my God. Do you know what? I'll have to chuck in one of my sweaty jockstrap dance belts from when I was younger, from when I used to go awesome. To like my youth theatres, and like we have to like obviously be all kind of suited up in our like dance wear, and you know, obviously if you've got a massive cock, you've got to act like in a jock, of course. So I have to whack in one of those sweaty dance belts, which brings me so many triggering memories of wearing one and being like, I don't know how to do this dance. So yeah, great.
Oh my God, that is... I literally was like, I cannot wait for this first item. It was literally, we were talking about that is a sweaty jog strap. So
love it.
That was you mentioned your earlier stagecoach like career in terms of your dance.
Do you know what? It was really fun. I mean, I found performing when I was kind of in like year seven, year eight at high school. So I kind of got into performance. How was that? Like 11, 12, something like that,
yeah.
13, that kind of age.
Years old, yeah.
Yeah, so I started kind of doing a lot of performance-based stuff, like acting and singing at school. Yeah. So I was always in like the school musicals and the school performances. So I would kind of do as much as I could because I was like, oh, I'm quite good at this and I can sing a little bit and I can act a bit and this is kind of cool. And I kind of, again, you kind of find the sorts of people who you have that kind of one thing in common with, which I think is across the board, whether it's athletics, whether it's, you know, textiles, cooking, whatever. If you're in a group of people, you've got a common interest, that's kind of the tribe you're going to hang out with for the next few years at school, of your school life. So I kind of found that, and you know, I didn't go to like a very kind of performing artsy kind of school, but the school I went to had a really good like arts kind of outlet. So whether it's music or acting, drama, art itself, like artistic things, paints and that kind of stuff. It really had a great outlet. So I tried to do as much as I could, but performing was always something I was always quite good at and could kind of like dip into quite quickly. So after that, I kind of, while I was at school doing that, I kind of started doing a lot of like local AmDram things and stuff, and kind of doing like dance classes and singing lessons, stuff outside. So I kept myself very kind of extracurricular savvy, if you know what I mean. So I did a lot outside of school, which was great.
So that's it sounds like school was quite an important part of what you were doing. And was it teachers, did they have an impact on what you were doing, or was it more just the circle that you were in and the friends that you were with? Which one was there a particular thing that was like, I'm going to focus on this, or was it more of a personal I love doing this?
I suppose a bit of both, really, because I, you know, I'm from a very working class family, single parent, and it's very easy because I'm from North London, and so it's very nice. Easy to kind of fall into, I'll just be lazy, I'll just hang out at the park all night drinking White Lightning, which is probably way older than what you guys anyway. So it's very easy to fall into that kind of way of life as a teenager, and I think that does kind of impact where you go as an adult, especially like you're kind of early 20s and whatnot. So I was always very conscious that I didn't want to go down that route. So, I got pushed by a couple of teachers in particular who were in the drama and the music department as well. So I got pushed by them quite a lot. And because I had a lot of friends who did the same stuff, you were always kind of in competition with your best mate, essentially. So I always tried to be better than my best friend and that kind of stuff. So, it was always something I just kind of did, not really because I was pushed to start with. I think I only got pushed once I really showed an avid interest in it and showed that I was quite passionate about it and was quite serious about it. So that was when the pushing from teachers really happened.
Oh, nice. So you said about you have a passion for it. So it leads quite nicely onto question two. It's all about our emotions. And do you have, I say the word physical activity to you, what's the first emotion that kind of comes into your head?
Guilt. Because I haven't done any over lockdown, which is awful. Like I've really tried to. I literally got like a yoga mat, a skipping rope, and some like yoga blocks. I was like, right, I'm gonna do press ups every day. I've done fuck all. So I've literally like that's like the first thing is guilt. But then looking back over the years and stuff of what I've done as a kid, I was never that great at the gym. I still am not. Like I still go. I'm like, oh god. Like I'm the sort of person I have to go. And I have to literally like cane it and be like, right, I've done it. Cause it's very easy to go, I'll just be lazy. I won't bother going. I'll bypass and go somewhere else for the day. And like, even like other like PE and that, cause I was good at like, you know, doing bits and pieces. I hated running. So that was something I didn't want to do. But anything kind of like athletics, like throwing things and like, you know, netball, basketball, indoor things, rounders, but you know, all that kind of stuff, I loved. I think it was like there was like a physical kind of connection with it, as opposed to just like, just like running. I'm like, this is boring. Like, why am I running? But Jeremy, so anything with like a physical attachment to it, is very interesting to me. there you go.
Of course,
we've already started. So for me, a lot of my kind of physical activity really came from doing performance and doing dance classes and doing like, you know, ensemble stuff and whatnot. So I felt like I got a lot of my physical, you know, energy out through dance and acting and kind of involving like a performance side of it, as opposed to going, I'm going to go and run for 20 minutes, which is like hell to me. But right now it's just pure guilt.
I totally agree. Like, I like to think of myself as quite physically active, but I hate running, and and I've got what my nan calls a runner's build. And she's like, "You're really, really skinny. You should be good at running." I'm like, "Well, I'm not, so thanks."
But you say, "Nan, I've not got a runner's. I've got a Twinkie build. That's my build. It's a Twinkie build."
I have been called that before. That's not the first time I've been called that. Well, if you're ever interested, we do free HIIT sessions. So in our Facebook group, so you can drop me a message if you're feeling like you need to.
I think I might have to, because it's been 4 months of me just like baking cakes and going, this is nice. Lockdown's great. Oh shit, I should probably actually leave the house.
Banana bread's like perfected.
Oh God, yes. But I might need to take you up on that.
anytime. So we've spoke about school quite a lot actually, but would you say that's your earliest memory of being physically active, or would you look back than that?
Yeah, I suppose that as my earliest memory of like a consistent thing. Like it was something I would do every kind of like, twice or three times a week. So it was always like a consistent thing like that. I still would be like, I would want to get out of doing like, you know, running and that, because I'll be like, no, not today. But because obviously the dancing side of it was always part of the learning, part of the performance side of it. I was like, yeah, obviously this is great. Plus, I love music and that kind of stuff. So there's a connection to it because I love dance, I love moving, I love doing all that kind of stuff. I love music, so that was a good fit for me for that, I suppose.
So it's really interesting to hear because it's going to be so different to the other type of people that we're having on the podcast. Because with physical activity for you, you really like it's got a strong link with dance. And for me, that's not the first thing I would necessarily think of. I'd probably think of running before. So when you're answering that question, like you showed both a positive and negative feeling towards it.
I think I sweat my tits off in Zumba, so and I think you did the same with your running. Do you know what I mean? It's just a different you're just using different body parts and different body muscles and whatnot. That is not a pun. Dance for me was always like I'm sweating my tits off, and because it's so intense, that was what I was used to doing. Whereas to me, like going for a run is just like, What? Where am I going? What am I doing? You know what I mean, so I think, but that's a great thing. I think everyone's got a connection to how they move their bodies in certain ways. Do you know what I mean? And that's whatever size you are. Do you know what I mean?
I totally agree. And I think the next point we want to talk about is a strong performance. And because I've got to say, watching you on Drag Race. Loved it. I was gutted that you were in the lip sync twice. But
I was going, I left early, but okay. It's all right.
I loved your lip sync performances, though. I think they were like a strong performance, you would say. And you're really good at them. And then even the maypole scene where you were you were passionate about it, and I loved it. And I was like, yes, these are great moments that we can actually talk about. So what do you say, do you need to put on a good show? Is physical activity part, do you feel like you need to be physically fit to be part of that, or is there other ingredients that you need?
I think stamina is the main thing you need, because if you can't if you're going to go on stage for an hour and be tuckered out by like 30 minutes in, that's something you should probably look at. A lot of time, being fit is, it's not just about, for me as a performer, it's not just about, being able to dance, being able to run, or being able to move in a certain way. It's also about singing as well. Like, I'm using certain muscles to sing and to speak and to project and that kind of stuff. I've spent a lot of years training those muscles to be able to do what I do now at a certain to a certain level and to a certain length of time. I do think you can strengthen it every day and do more, and I think I do need to do more to kind of strengthen that. But I think stamina is a big thing that comes with being a performer. If you look at Beyonce, for instance, she will literally go on a treadmill, full pelt, singing Halo at full volume. Wow. And literally, that's great because then she can transfer that. If she can do it on a treadmill, she can do an hour and a half concert. So I think when you're performing, to put on a good performance from a physical point of view, there is kind of a level of fitness, a level of health that you need to be able to sustain your job, essentially. So I suppose when I'm on stage, I'm very conscious of like what I've been doing before and lead up to that, and how I'm going to treat my body and my voice to be able to deliver the goods that people paid for.
I totally agree. And the Beyonce things, I've never even heard that she did that. So do you have a version of that regime, or is it more just you're so in demand at the moment that your performances are your training as well?
Yeah, I wish I would get the treadmill and sing Beyonce Halo in the original key and do it really well, but I don't do that.
I think I would have watched it, to be honest.
Would that be fun? Would that be a camp challenge on Drag Race? Sing this song in a treadmill. I don't know. I think it's weird because before lockdown, I was literally like run off my feet doing, I was traveling all over the place. I was in Amsterdam, Paris, this, that, the other, gigging all the time, doing bits and pieces. And I did notice that my voice was kind of just tired, just because when you're traveling every day, then doing a show every night, you're kind of not sleeping as much. You're probably drinking a little bit as well, because obviously you're on tour. Why not? You're shagging people, whatever. So you do bits and pieces that will
affect. You're busy.
You're busy. Yeah. So you're doing business that will affect you in certain ways, hopefully without a trip to the doctor. But, you know, you're just kind of, you're just tired and kind of fatigued in a way. So for me,
You did say hopefully, not a trip.
Hopefully, because you never know, my love. You never know. You know, if you've got kids or you know, gonorrhea walking around, you just never know sometimes. So for me, it was kind of, I just kind of make sure that I'm trying to eat well, drinking enough water, steaming, just having those kind of transferable things that I would do from, say, drama school or whatever into, like, a normal kind of drag queen day. Because end of the day, I think people go, oh, you're on Drag Race and it feels very glamorous. But when you're in the full slog of touring and doing bits and pieces, you know, you are touring and it's tiring and, you know, and you do have to be kind of find the energy from somewhere. So you've got to be quite careful with what you're doing and looking after yourself in that kind of way. But I don't have any kind of set, like, I'm going to run on a treadmill for ages. I just kind of, like, you know, do as much as I can to look after myself. But again, I could do more. I feel like I'm saying that now because I've not done much over the lockdown. But do you know what I mean? You can always do it more, I suppose.
I always feel like that. Would you say there's a difference between the drag show preparation and what you were doing for the musical? What do you feel, there was any differences between the two?
In terms of my own show that I do?
Your preparation and how you looked after yourself.
No, I think they're pretty similar, only because I started off in theatre, and that's kind of where my training all comes from. I just apply that all to the drag stuff. So essentially, the drag stuff is me just singing and talking the same way I would do in the show. So it's just kind of, you know, applying what I know as an actor into my kind of drag work and just kind of going from there, really.
Mm-hmm. I think looking at RuPaul's Drag Race from what we've been talking about, you did mention quite an interesting part, which you wouldn't really tell from your social media, that you had a hole in your heart. You were born with one.
Yeah.
Did that, along with treatment, have become a barrier to physical activity in the early stages of life?
Yeah, I think so. I think I definitely. It's the thing. I definitely think I should have exercised a way lot more than I did when I was a kid. But I think naturally, I'm not that I'm lazy when it comes to exercise, but I just would rather do other things. So again, it wasn't until I found the performance and dancing, which, like I said, it wasn't until I was like 12 or 13 that I was like, oh, okay, I quite enjoy this side. I can do this. But anything before that, I was like, I don't want to get to it. And then obviously as a kid, you kind of get very kind of self-conscious about your body and if people are laughing at you because you're running and that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. So you don't want to fall into that kind of thing of getting laughed at, when actually it's like, who cares? Just do it. So I think for me, it's a sort of thing that I manage, and luckily now, like, I'm all good and that kind of stuff. But I suppose as a kid, you know, there are certain things that I could have done, but overall, I've been very healthy and very good and get checked up on that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's just one of those things. And I thought I was the only person in the world who had it, when actually, you know, there's hundreds of people, thousands of people who have the same surgery, and, you know, they treat their bodies way worse than I do. I know someone who, like, just smokes in it and that kind of stuff, takes drugs. I'm like, no, don't do that. No. Your body's not made for that, but hey ho. So yeah, I think I'm, you know, in a good category with it, really.
Nice. So you mentioned about the barrier of, like, swimming and with your shirt off and stuff like that, and how it could have been hard. And what would you say to others in a similar kind of situation now, with, or if they're having a confidence issue with that?
I'll just get it out. Do you know what I mean? I had the confidence issue because I was a bit chubby. So I was like, oh my God, I don't want to get it out and that kind of stuff. So that was my main issue. The scar actually is not even anything. I quite like having a chest scar. I can't imagine. Actually, I did a shoot once. It's a drag shoot. And normally I use the scar that I've got as, like, a bit of, like, a cleavage kind of thing. So I'll use it to, like, shade in, to give me some nice big boobs.
Oh, nice.
And it makes all the boys very happy, which is great. But I did this shoot where they actually photoshopped out my scar without asking me. So I got the pictures back. I was like, hang on, this looks really strange. I couldn't even put a finger on why it looked weird. It wasn't until I saw that the scar had actually gone, I was like, oh my God, that is mental. So one, I was annoyed that they took it out without asking me, because that's my thing. I'm not trying to hide it from anyone, that's my thing. But it was also very interesting to see my chest without a scar on it, because I've never seen anyone without a scar before. So I was like, oh, that's how I would look without a chest scar. I was like, that's really boring. Like, it just looked really boring. I was like, oh, maybe I prefer it. So I would say, you know, it's one of those things where I think everyone's got something that they're self-conscious about, whether they're too fit, whether they're too thin, you know, or this is how they perceive themselves. They're too thin, too fat, too white, too black, too this, too that, too spotty, or too whatever. And actually, even though I totally get and empathize, because I've been there myself, having that kind of, what, you know, body's sort of self-conscious about your body, I think as soon as you get it out and you're just like, okay, this is me, you know,
yeah,
who cares? Like, once someone's seen it, and I guarantee a lot of the time people don't even notice what you think that they're kind of really thinking about or talking about. And bear in mind, like, a lot of the time it's only temporary. So, you know, whether you're a teenager who thinks they're too thin or too fat or whatever, you know, if you want to change that about yourself, the great thing is that you can, and there's so many resources out there to bulk up or to lose weight, you know, or to, you know, repair your skin or whatever, like, whether you've got, like, I don't know, acne scars or something, I don't know. There are resources out there and things that you can get which are accessible to change that. So I think, you know, this whole kind of thing of body confidence is a thing of just looking at it going, okay, I want to change this, I'm able to change it, and I'm going to, but right now in this moment, I'm just going to embrace what I've got, because it's cool, it's nice and hot.
Love that. I love that message. And it leads so perfectly onto our next bit, because we're talking about how airbrushing and Instagram is such a big topic at the moment, especially when people trying to are so conscious of their body image and they try to maybe make themselves look better than they actually are, or they're scared to really show the real themselves, as you were saying. So one thing I wanted to discuss with you, which I think will be a really interesting topic, is that there's a stereotype within the LGBTQ+ community.
All
the letters. I saw QUA. I've never seen the UA. Do you know what they stand for?
Oh God, I've got no idea. Mm. I just now call them LGBT Batman symbol, and we just go from there, ? hashtag. Sometimes it is the LGBGs, and I'll start singing the BGs, who knows?
BGs. Oh yeah, I'll try to get my master that next time. But there's a stereotype that they're very body conscious and they're not always, it's not always in the healthiest way. Is that a fair stereotype, would you say?
Oh, absolutely, for the most part. You know, I think, okay, so for instance, with drag queens, I get why you would want to Photoshop. I've done it a little bit where I've kind of like just gone, oh, the lighting's hit my nose really weird in that bit, so let me just nick that nose in a little bit just to make it a bit more proportioned or whatever. I know some drag queens, I don't really name any names, but I know some drag queens who literally will doctor their pictures so that they're like they've gone from, like, you know, a fat bloke in a wig into, you know, a girl from Little Mix. I'm like, I don't understand it, but literally they doctor the whole shebang. But not saying that person has any kind of body dysmorphia or body image issues, it's just for drag. So okay, fine, whatever. I know a lot of gay guys, one in particular I know who has like who's a dancer. I think he has like an OnlyFans account as well, so he's like, you know, bit of porn here and there, but literally the photos that he puts up are hilarious, because it's like he's really short as well, actually, and he's got like a six pack and that kind of stuff, but you can literally tell where he's kind of doctored it to give him the kind of V shape in the back, to give him the muscly arms, the big shoulders, the tiny waist, you know, the kind of the perfect bum and that kind of stuff, to the point where you can see that the background is wavy from where he's literally airbrushed it and, like, you know, doctored it, that kind of stuff. And I do think, you know, for a lot of people who do it If you did like a couple of pictures, fine. You know, it's just, you know, the apps are there to be used for that kind of stuff. But I think there is a conversation to be had about people who they take a picture and they have to literally airbrush the hell out of it and do all the body mods to it as well. And that's to every single picture. So there is a conversation about the kind of the mental health side of what social media actually is, especially if you're a young person who is already naturally quite pretty or quite beautiful, but you're trying to portray this sort of persona or personality. And the way to do that is not through personality, actually. It's about through the way you look. And, you know, looks are sustainable for for where you are in your 20s is not how you're really going to look in your 40s, unless you're J-Lo. So, it's very interesting to me about the kind of mental health side of what it is to be that kind of person who sees themselves a certain way and has to use apps and those kind of things to doctor the way they look and post on social media just for self-gratification from other people, likes are, who cares about a like, but a lot of people care about the way people are, you know, giving them that that instant gratification for how they look. So it's quite sad in a way, because I mean, as I said, I've maybe doctored a handful of pictures purely because I might look quite sweaty in one picture. I'm like, oh, let me just smooth that out so I don't look so sweaty. Or I'll filter it because the lighting's a bit shit, so I just want to get the lighting looking right. But I've never gone, do you know what? Let me give myself a 16-inch waist and this kind of stuff, because it's not me. Because for what I do, I need people to come and see me in shows, see me on stage. And they're looking at me on Instagram, looking all thin and gorgeous and stuff, and they see me on stage, they're like, who's this fat bitch? Where'd she come from? Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, it's very interesting, especially young gay men as well, young gay boys, because bear in mind, I grew up in a time when there was no iPhones, there was no internet, there was no Grindr, there was no hookup apps and that kind of stuff. And you know, and now young gay boys are growing up in a world where you can, you know, you can get a shag at 15 and not tell them, oh yeah, I'm 18, but you're 15, but you've got an app to find a shag and that kind of stuff. You can ease, it's so, being gay and the gay lifestyle, that kind of side, which is full of the drugs and full of the parties and full of this, that, the other, is very accessible to young.
Yeah.
Young gay boys. So yeah, and I think when it comes to like how they want to put themselves out in the world, they are going to jump on the apps and doctor this and doctor that to create the perfect image of what they think other gay men want to see, you know.
I think that's really interesting. There's a few things I think we can definitely delve into a bit more there, because you say it's quite bad for the people who maybe are like just coming out, or if you're sitting around the age of like 15, or quite young people,
they
open up into a whole new world. And if you link that specifically to body image and how they feel like they may have to like act or may have to make themselves look, then that can be quite a lot of pressure. Do you think that has come from the industry, or do you think it's come from other people that they've seen? Do you think it's more like they have to look a certain way to get a certain deal, or is it more you've got to look away because everyone's doing it?
Yeah, I mean, I really think there's a big thing where the types of gay men that we see now are not the kind of gay men we saw when I was 15. So what's that, 20 years ago? So 20 years ago, when I was a 15-year-old gay boy, you would only really see different types of gay guys if you went out to, like, you know, clubs or the bars in Soho and that kind of stuff, which is what I used to do quite regularly. Like, you know, I'm going to my friend's house and we'll be out clubbing till God knows what time, because it's just what you did. But again, there was no Instagram, there was no Facebook, there was no kind of, you know, at your fingertips versions of guys who are, you know, if you type in gay man into Instagram or Pinterest, whatever, you just get a lot of beautiful looking men with great bodies, big dicks, you know, all this kind of stuff. And you're like, okay, cool. So this is what I have to look like to be a gay man. So there's not really much representation for, you know, gay men of color or gay men of different sizes or even hairy men. Like, do you know what I mean? There's not, unless unless you type in hairy guy, you're not really going to get what a broad spectrum of what a gay man can be. Yeah. I don't know. I think, you know, it's scary. I would hate to be a teenage boy right now, knowing that there's a way that I can, not even for sex, but even just meeting older guys, and a lot of the older guys who might meet might not have your best interests at heart. I was very lucky when I was younger because I've met a few older gay men who weren't about sex. They were just saying, this is the scene. This is what this, they kind of introduced me into the scene. And I got a really kind of great introduction into what it was like to be a gay person in London at that time. But there was no kind of like secondary thing of, right, well, I've shown you this bar, so now you've got to nosh me off. Do you know what I mean? There was nothing like that. It was just like, thank you. Great. Thank you for that. So I was very lucky in that respect. Whereas I feel like there's so much emphasis on looks. How do you look? What are you wearing? You know, how do you fit in with these guys here? Because, you know, I think a lot of them kind of groom to look the same and they date the same kind of people. You know, so if you've not got a muscly arm and a beard, you're kind of not hot. Do you know what I mean? So I would hate to be 15, 16 right now and being gay and trying to discover yourself and having all this kind of accessibility to Grindr and all these apps and porn and all this kind of stuff and be like, great. Because when I was younger, like, porn was like you had to find a VHS tape in your brother's bedroom under his bed and be like, just steal this videotape and do you know what I mean? And hope for the best. Do you know what I mean? So, yeah, I do feel like it's a very different time. And that's only 20 years. Like, that's no time at all. So, yeah, I think it's going to be, it's interesting to see where a young person kind of fits in this kind of thing. And on top of that, we're now saying gender and pronouns and that kind of stuff, which is all stuff. It's like, you know, I find it confusing in a way. It's like, okay, how do you navigate through this? But then that's coming from someone who's in their 30s. I bet the kids are just like, yeah, this is how it is. It's fine. And they're getting on with it. Do you know what I mean? But I don't know if I'd be able to manage if I was like 15, 16 right now.
So yeah, that's, leads us on really nicely, because I think we've spoken about LGBT and being gay quite openly and nicely, and then you mentioned a few times about being, you say it quite strongly, where I can tell when you say you're quite passionate about it, like, about being black and gay, you know, the way times. And do you feel being black has ever impacted the way that you kind of have participated in physical activity? Do you feel it impaired you at all throughout this?
Well, I think there's this whole thing which I'm very vocal about, is the kind of making a fetish out of someone's skin color, in a way. You know, there's a lot of people out there who absolutely love, you know, someone with darker skin, which is great, you know, good for you. But it's when you've got the guys who just really kind of turn it into a fetish, and kind of what they see on porn when they type in, you know, big black cop, just say, and they expect every black guy to be, you know, like the 12-inch porn star that they've seen on their laptops. So I think there's a big conversation of, you know, how is that a reasonable bit of language to have about a black gay person? And then, you know, does that in term, I mean, I personally, for me, I think it informs racism in not a way of like, I'm racist in a negative way, but that person, that white person who's made a fetish out of that person, is showing racism by kind of objectifying someone because of their skin color. It's the same as you know, objectifying a younger gay guy because he's young and he's short and he's thinner, or you know, objectifying a woman because she got big boobs, or like, they only see that one thing as the thing of attraction before they've got to have a conversation, before they've actually been like, is this person even funny? Can they make me laugh? Do you know what I mean? You know, so I think there's a whole conversation there just about how white people and white gay men fetishize a black guy to be just about, you know, the kind of stereotype and the tropes of what they think a black guy is going to be like in bed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I totally see what you mean. And to round it off into how we're talking about like physical activity now, do you feel your color of your skin was you were impacted in a negative way in terms of trying to engage in activity? Was it something growing up with that you struggled to maybe engage in certain groups, or was it more it's always been quite easy for you?
Not necessarily, because I was always quite flirty anyway. So I was always had like a very pointed direction of like, hello, I'm gonna flirt with this person today. So I never felt held back from there. And again, I'm from London, so I've got all of my mates, all the people I've grown up with, are very kind of it's a melting pot of cultures,
diverse,
skin colors and faces and body size. And it's very diverse. So for me, I never once thought, oh my God, well, I'm black, so it's going to be really, really hard to get laid. I think I got laid more because I was talented and because I had some good chat and that kind of stuff. But I do know what you mean. Like there is a kind of thing of, I think as I've got older, I've definitely seen it a lot more and I've spoken to different types of white gay men, where I go, oh, okay, you're only really talking to me because of that. You're not actually talking to me because of this, or because of who I am or my personality or something like that. You're just kind of really just talking to me because of that, and you're just horny, whatever. So I think when I was younger, not so much, but as I've got older, I've definitely seen it more, and I've seen what the outcomes are with what people are using for their language and that kind of stuff. But then in the same vein, I've definitely changed my kind of wants and needs out of people as well. So, I don't want the same things I used to want from certain people. And I wouldn't, and I actually now don't compromise myself as much as I would have when I was younger. So I think I definitely was like, I'm feeling a bit unconfident about this. So I'll just go with it because this person's showing me a bit of attention. Well, actually I probably didn't need to. And I did, it was kind of shit. So I was like, I really didn't need to do that, did I? So yeah, you live and learn.
Totally agree. I wanted to bring something to maybe your attention, maybe something that you haven't seen. It's quite big in the football world at the moment. There's a footballer called Troy Deeney. He's a Watford player. I don't know if you've heard of him.
Did he come out recently?
He spoke about something recently that I wanted to bring. But he said Watford captain Troy Deeney believes there is possibly one gay or bisexual player in every team, and says there is now a bigger platform than ever to be out as a professional. He said, if they came out and said it, I genuinely believe you would get in the first week at least 100 people saying, yeah, me too. Do you feel that is the case? Do you feel that there could possibly be that many people within these teams who are scared to come out?
Yeah, because wasn't there a guy who came out recently? I'm sure there was, was it a black guy or was it a white guy? Someone came out in, I think it was football or rugby or something, quite recently. And yeah, I mean, come on. These are men who are men. And I think there's sexuality is so much more than just you are gay, you are straight. Do you know what I mean? There's so much more to it than just kind of the black and white versions of what I think a lot of Joe Public, Joe Blogs kind of will think, because they just think, oh, if he's gay, he's gay. Well, actually, no. Like, I actually think there's more chance of there being a few straight identifying guys who maybe would, sway with the right amount of alcohol inside them, or the right amount of chat, right amount of connection with someone. I know plenty, in fact, I've been with plenty of straight guys who have done exactly that, I think there is this whole stigma in football. I mean, I don't play football. The last match I watched, the last match I ever watched was Euro 96, and that's not even a lie. Mm. That's the last football match I ever watched. You probably weren't even born then. But
it was five.
So I'm 1 year old. Yeah, so that was my first match I ever watched and my last. But I do know that in sport in general, there is a lot of homophobia, a lot of there's especially in football, because it's supposed to be a man's sport. It's a straight guy sport. It's a white sport. Do you know what I mean? Already there's people, being attacked because of their race and being called monkey and that kind of stuff. Even Beckham has got it, hasn't he, in the ear from the fans, about posh bias and whatnot. So, I think there's a lot of problematic issues with football anyway, with the fandom and that kind of stuff. But, you know, I think it is a shame that there are going to be plenty of gay or bisexual or pansexual, whatever, players who don't feel like they can come out. And we're not talking just about, you know, football in one country. It's a worldwide sport. Yeah. Do you know what I mean? So I'm telling you, there are bound to be hundreds, if not thousands, of players out there who are gay, pan, bi, whatever, probably even trans. You never know. You just never know. You know, who are in this sport, and because of the pressures to be the best footballer on the team, to become a name, to have all this money thrown at them, fame or whatever, if they get that high, you know, I bet there is a lot of pressure to come out. And it's cool that that guy said, you know, if the more players come out, they'll probably say me too. But I think, as we know, with, you know, the male psychology, I don't know if there will be lots of me too. So I think there'll be.
You don't reckon that message will work.
I still think there'll be a lot of repression. I still think there'll be a lot of guys out there who would bottle it up, and then, you know, and they'd have to, like, you know, say it, and then they would probably leave the sport. You know, I feel like a lot of the guys who have come out have kind of left the sport. Mm-hmm. Maybe, I don't know.
But, yeah, that's true. Yeah, with Callum, who's the absolute genius. I mentioned him once or twice on these pods because he's the genius behind this, and he's researching the stats while we're talking. And he said, "There's been four openly gay footballers in the UK. They were all retired when they came out, and the fourth one was recently. Yeah, Thomas Beattie for Hull City.
Yeah, me, Thomas. I kind of disagree. I don't think there will be lots of me toos. I think there'll be a lot of, like, praise for someone coming out and, you know, being this is who I am from that point of view. But again, that praise will come from a small pool of people who don't have a problem with it. But I actually think a bulk of the fandom who are straight white men who literally do their 9 to 5 job and then watch football as their weekend thing, I don't think they'd be like, oh, he's gay. So they would literally tear him a new one. If he came out on the pitch, they'd tear him a new one. Of course they would, because that's the culture. The culture is to tear people down before they just say, okay, cool, this guy's gay, but who cares? Because he's the best player on the team. So it's win a fucking game. They would much rather have a straight guy who was a bit shit on there rather than the great gay guy on there. So as much as a lovely sentiment, I kind of disagree that there'll be lots of me toos. I think there would be, the door would be open, but I don't know if a lot of gay footballers would walk through it, because it's,
and I agree. Yeah. I think it's a strong opinion, and I think it's one where, for example, racism in football, you see the body coming in a lot more. And what Troy Deeney is saying is that the people should manage this. And you see with racism, obviously there's still a lot that needs to be done, but you see there's pressure on the footballing bodies to say, you need to resolve this and you need to do things. And the players are still taking it into their hands. They're doing a lot of, on one knee at the moment, which is awesome, but the bodies themselves have a lot of pressure to have the kick it out and the no to racism campaigns.
So
you feel like that is the approach that needs to be taken, the bodies we need to support people who want to come out, or do you feel like it's just something that
I do think there should be the kind of gateway for people to be able to just come out and just kind of go on and do their jobs, be the best footballer on that team, and regardless of they're gay, bi, whatever, they should have the freedom to do that. Absolutely, I believe that.
Yeah,
I don't care if you're a cleaner or a footballer or whatever. If you are gay and that is your truth, or you're queer, whatever, you should be able to put that out there, and that actually be secondary. It's not even about that. Who cares? who actually cares who you put your dick in, do you know what I mean? Or who you love. It's about if you're gonna I'd rather someone shout at a queer person on the pitch for being the worst player. You're shit, I mean, you're a bad player, yeah. Rather than saying, well, you're gay. Like, yeah, we know that. But if you're a shit player, then maybe that shout them for that. Mm. But I do think that clearly there isn't a lot being done, because there's still people out there who are playing this game who aren't able to come out and just be themselves. And I think, you know, I get it when you're a teenager and, you know, you don't want to come out because of you know, the fear of your family or friends and that kind of stuff, or being kind of objectified in whatever way. But you should be able to come out at work. You should. Yeah. Kind of be who you are at work. So, yeah, I think the bodies who have the powers to be should do more, and to make it a safe space for people to do that.
You seem, you mentioned that there was a nice sentiment, but you seem a bit like maybe possibly frustrated with maybe a straight person like Troy Deeney coming out and saying this. Is that the case, or have I misread that?
No. I'm not frustrated about a straight person doing that, because actually I didn't even know you were straight. I was like, okay, cool, you're straight. Who knows? That's a new revelation to me. But I do, no, it's not frustration. I just think it's kind of easy to say when you are straight, to say, yeah, it's easy to say if one gay person comes out, then that the more will follow, because that's really not the case. It's really not the case, you know. It's an individual thing as well, you know. This person isn't just coming out in front of the world, in front of the fans and the football fans, that kind of stuff. It's also family and friends, and there's a whole bunch of other people in their lives who they are coming out to as well. So it's not as black and white as just saying, if one person comes out in football, more will follow. I disagree with that 100%, because again, it's not like if it was like gymnastics or athletics or something like that, where people you watch the Olympics once, about great, let's win a gold medal. Oh, and also this guy's wearing lycra, we're going to watch this and enjoy that. It's not like that. You know, I expect every gymnast to be raging when I watch the Olympics. And I think a lot of like swimmers, like, so I think you naturally go, if it's a bit more of a kind of, you know, sexualized, I think all sport is quite sexualized anyway, but like when it's a sexualized sport like that, where it's more about the beauty of someone's body, and the beauty of the shapes you make and that kind of stuff, you can be gay and people will love that. You can kind of make a persona in that realm. But with football, because it's so notorious for racism and hooligans and all this kind of stuff, you know, and just like men being men, all that kind of stuff, there's no way that you know, if you've got this femme guy who plays for Sheffield Wednesday, I don't know any teams, but you know what I mean, playing for this team, is going to go, oh yeah, well, if he's come out, I'll come out as well, because I don't know, there is a power in numbers, but yeah. I feel like the noise from these fans does kind of unfortunately outweigh the noise of what thing. I think it's a bigger thing than one person coming out. It has to be a whole pride parade of football fans. You know, where the fuck is football pride? Where's a pride version for football? Do you know what I mean? You know, where okay, I don't know, it's half time and we just get a whole, and I'm turning it now into like an American thing, we get a whole pride parade of gay footballers, gay fans of football, you know, the parents of gay players, the parents of gay fans. Do you know what I mean? It has to, it's way more than just one person saying, oh well, if he comes out, more will follow, because it's not, it can't be done with one person. It has to be done with a whole fleet of people. And I know plenty of gay guys, gay women, who love football and that kind of stuff, yet there seems to be no kind of LGBTQI football alliance happening. Maybe that needs to happen, do you know what I mean? But at the moment, I don't
I'm all over that.
But at the moment, I don't believe that. I don't believe that it's something that's going to happen with one person coming out. And that's, and actually, now that you've said it, yeah, I am frustrated that a straight person said that, because it's easy to say, oh, well, if one person comes out, it's fine. No, it's not fine. Yeah. It's not easy. You know, you're going to need to have some sort of pride and link the community with football.
Yeah.
Even the gay guys who I know and the lesbians I know who love football, they're very butch. They're very kind of like, you go, oh, you're straight. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? You know, there's no link between the LGBT community and football. There's nothing there.
I just love that you've called out. So yeah, Vinegar Strokes calls out the FA for a gay pride. I literally, I reckon you would like to attend and I would like to attend too, and we'll run it.
Can you imagine me walking out, hello? They'll be like, what the hell's going on?
I think if they questioned it, then I think you'll be able to give them a run for their money.
Yeah, I just think, you know, it's end of the day, it's a sport and it's entertainment. End of the day, let's remember, this is like sport is for entertainment value. That's the whole reason why people go, and people get very passionate about football, which I think is amazing. If you can go through life with this, with one passion, and if football's your thing, that's amazing. But you don't need to be racist or homophobic or transphobic, whatever, in the thing you love, because they're two separate things. The fact that this guy loves a bit of cock does not mean that he's not going to be a great player. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, 100%.
If I put that crudely, do you know what I mean? That's how it is.
Yeah.
You know?
No, I totally agree. I think we've covered some really amazing and important topics there. And one thing that I 100% know I'd really struggle to get out of any other person I talk to, thank you so much for being able to cover that kind of topic. And so I kind of want to find a bit more about you to finish off, because there's some quite interesting three questions left to get to know you as well. So just in general, are you someone who sets goals? You have goals that you set and then think, I've got to achieve this, and that's something you work towards?
Yeah, absolutely. Like work-wise, yes, because I think I'm trying to build a massive empire here for Vinegar Strokes. So I think you haven't got goals to strive towards, you're not really doing your dream thing, whatever that might be. I always think, because obviously I've been performing for so long now that I feel like I've been there, seen it and done it a lot of times with the way this kind of career works. And it's so funny because like a lot of the girls on Drag Race, you know, you can tell that it's their first time experiencing kind of a showbiz kind of thing. Whereas I've kind of done it in every kind of which way, from Fringe Theatre, Amdram, all the way to West End, all the way to TV with this. And I feel like, you know, because I've had that experience before Drag Race, obviously with Drag Race, we're all kind of thrust into people's homes, into this kind of instant fame in a way. And I always say, like, it's harder after Drag Race than it is before. So like if you do Drag Race, before you do Drag Race or don't do Drag Race, you just kind of can do your gigs, you can do like a normal kind of bar job, whatever like that, and you can kind of just keep going what you want to do. But when you do a show like Drag Race, you kind of have to go, okay, am I carrying this on and turn this into something, or am I just going to do what I was doing before? For me, I was like, no, next level up. So as much as that is like my big platform right now, I'm already looking for them. I mean, I've been looking for the next one. I've had a couple of great platforms come my way since Drag Race, but I've always been looking for that next platform, even from when I got eliminated. It's like, okay, what's next? And then what's next after that? So
what's the dream? What's the dream platform?
Oh, God. Do you know what? I think the dream is I feel like it's just to keep working and keep growing. I know it's like really, really cliche, really wanky, but I think, If I say, right, I want to be on EastEnders, great. That's a great goal to have. Get on EastEnders.
Oh my God, you'd be great.
And then on that for a couple of episodes, and you've done it. Then what? So I always feel like you have to not have like a specific goal. You can have some specific goals of you want to do this, you want to do that. You can name it. You can pop it on your mood board and that kind of stuff. But I do think just having an overall kind of thing of going, okay, for me, I just want to keep working, keep creating, you know, and keep kind of keeping happy. Do you know what I mean? And that comes with, you know, just being open to things and not shutting down things because, oh, oh, I've been offered a great gig, but the fee is £100. But I've been on telly, so I'm used to getting paid £1,000. Who cares? Mm-hmm. It's the point of this industry is that you work with people, people work with you, and you want to, as long as you're nice mm-hmm. and fun to work with, more opportunities will come. But a lot of people get blindsided by that kind of that fee of £100 or £50 without realizing that the person who's kind of talking to you as a runner just on a TV show could be a massive boss one day and be hiring for something else. It's the same as sport, it's the same as anything. If you're just nice to people and you're willing just to graft and put the work in, people remember that. People remember the way you make them feel, as opposed to you coming in just doing a death drop. Great, nice one. But if you're a cunt afterwards, do you know what I mean? Who wants to see you? You know?
So have you got a next big thing that you want to, like, throw our audience's way? If they've met you for the first time, is what I'm in, this is what I'm doing?
So at the moment, I'm in quarantine, I'm in lockdown, so you can't see me much in the flesh, apart from maybe on the street corner. I'm kind of just doing bits and pieces. I'm doing the Canada's Drag Race recap show, which is on WoW Presents Plus and on YouTube as well. So that's kind of my main kind of like hosting TV thing. I'm working on a little project which I literally can't say anything about, but there's something kind of bubbling in the pipeline which I'm just kind of like waiting for everything to kind of go yes, and then I could be like, okay, great, here it is. But there's something very exciting I'm working on, more music as well is coming.
I loved your song.
Thank you.
Obsessed with your song, by the way. He's put loads of quotes in it. I've not been able to like get them in anywhere. So I reckon he's going to be really disappointed. Gonna have to scroll through my notes and a working class black bitch with thick legs and fake tits.
That's right. Working class black bitch with thick legs and fake tits. That all came about because I was like, I got the track and I was like, I want like a Lizzo type, a Lizzo Juice kind of song. So we got the track back and I was like, okay, let me just, and I wrote the verses for that. And I was like, let me just kind of just write. And I was like, I came in and hello darling is something I love to say. Hello darling, how are you? So I thought, all right, we'll just start with that, something fun. Darling starts with starring. I bet you never thought you'd see a show starring someone like me. Do you know what I mean? So it's all kind of like bigging up the kind of working class black bitches with thick legs and fake tits. So yeah, I was like, great, nice, here we go. So yeah, that's very much like a comedy. It's like comedy tongue in cheek, but it's a lot of truth to it, you know.
I love it. Honestly, like I didn't know until Drag Race I'm going to mention him. He would love that I've mentioned him. Friend Jack. As soon as I said your name, he messaged me about a million times. He was like, if you need any help, if you need me to be there, if you need me to explain anything.
Oh!
Created a fact sheet of stuff just for you. He loves you. And he's in the acting industry. And he was like, the song as well. So
is Jack cute? Single? Does he want to DM
Jack me? Is really cute, and I'll get him to message you. But he's not. He's DM got a girlfriend, but I'm going to get him to message you anyway.
That could be his girlfriend. Is she a blonde or a brunette? I've got the wigs. It's fine.
Brunette.
Fab. Yeah. I've got three brown wigs. I'll wear them all. He'll never know. He'll never know.
Awesome. He'll love that. So then the last question for you is based around an inspirational dinner party.
Ooh.
So what I like to do is imagine you're in one seat and you've got three other seats around you. And we've had some really interesting ones so far. I'd like to give my own so everyone can have a bit of time to think about who they would have. It's past, present, future. It can be anyone. So mine's Nanny Barbs. She is amazing, an angel, just do anything for me.
Yeah.
Frank Lampard, football, like he would just score goals from anywhere. So I was like, when I was growing up, I just wanted to, score goals anywhere as well.
Yeah.
And then the last one's a guy called Graham Hughes, and he's someone who people don't know much about, but he was the first guy to travel around all like the United Nations countries by foot. And so he went around all of them. I think he would just have of interesting information that I would look kind of like broaden my horizons. So there's my three. Who would you have?
God. Okay, right. I've got to pick three three women who are just amazing. I like a nice strong woman. Okay, well let's go. Obviously, Tina Turner first because she's like legit one of my idols. She's very camp, and plus she's had like the most insane life you've ever heard of. You know, and she's a star. So definitely Tina Turner. Yeah.
Puts on a good physical show as well.
Oh, listen, physical show. And do you know what? The only reason why she retired is because she was like, I'm not doing the show as well as I would have done, say, 2 years ago or whatever like that. Because she's now in her 70s. It's like, I have a break. You know, chill out for a bit now.
Yeah.
But like, that was the only reason why she quit. Otherwise, she would have kept going, of course. Mm. Let's go with Joan Rivers because she was absolutely hilarious. One of my favorite comedians ever. And I just loved that she tells it as it is. And she'll swear at you and you'll be like, oh my God, please keep swearing at me. So I love Joan Rivers. I think she'd be amazing to have around there. I don't know how inspirational she'll be, but she'll be hilarious. But I think a little bit inspirational. A little bit like...
It is if she inspires you. That's the main thing. It's not about...
She inspires
you to be...
Yeah.
Joan Rivers for sure.
And maybe Whoopi Goldberg, purely because Whoopi is just like... intellectual legend, comedy legend, acting legend. I feel like I want her to hug me and then just slap me, and then we'll do a nice little sing song afterwards. I think she's absolutely incredible. So yeah, Whoopi Goldberg, Joan Rivers, and Tina Turner.
That was my last thing to ask you to repeat them, but you've of course
already.
you know how these things work. You're a trained professional. Oh, and you've done.
I'm a podcast bro.
Yeah, oh my God. Honestly, I've enjoyed this so much. This has been really fun.
I've had a great time. Thanks for asking me.
And thank you for talking about topics that people in sport really struggle to. So I love it. So yeah, thank you so much.
Listen, start talking people in sport. Do you know what I mean? It's not all about, you know, sweating. Let's sweat and talk at the same time, I guess. So, yeah.
Yeah, cool. Oh, yeah, thank you. And that's it. We're done for the day. Oh, my God. That was so good. I literally loved every second of that.
Yay. See ya.